Hi, this is Jean-Jacques Taylor, and you're listening to Jock Talk. This is a podcast where I talk about the Cowboys, the team I've covered as a beat writer, columnist, TV insider, and radio host for 28 years. I'll also talk about the NFL and the things I love, working out, streaming, food, and all things Dallas. My boy Big Joe and the Big Rig, one of my oldest friends, produces the show and occasionally chimes in with his thoughts on the Cowboys. After all, he's a lifelong Cowboys fan, and he played high school, college, and semi-pro football. Welcome to Jock Talk, where sports is fluid. What's true today might not be true an hour, a day, or a month from now. I'm going to give you the truth straight. No chaser. Glad to have you aboard. Let's get it. Welcome to episode 85 of Jock Talk. I'm Jean-Jacques Taylor, your host, joined by my boy Big Joe and the Big Rig. We hope you are prepared to be entertained and dazzled for the next hour or so as we go through the Dallas Mavericks, what do you call the thing, man? The NCAA tournament. And my favorite topic of the day, the 1995 Cowboys draft. First up, though, 85, who comes to mind, bro?
Kevin Williams.
You know what? K-Dub.
K-Dub. Number 85. Yes, sir.
He does come to mind for me, too. I've been looking for K-Dub for a project I'm working on. So when I find him, I'll let y'all know.
Man, it ain't been too many 85s that we can pull up, right? Because I'm going through the Rolodex, and I'm
struggling.
Yeah, who the hell is 85, guy? Somebody out there going to go, somebody going to say, you don't remember this guy? And we're going to go, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Because my auntie chastised me for us not knowing T.O. right off the bat. Yeah, how crazy is that? He was here, he was loud, he was crazy, he was tripping, and he was gone. I probably put him out of my memory,
There's a lot of things going on. T.O. was only here 3 years. There was a lot of action going on while he was here.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And he was in the middle of it.
Hey, before we get started, I want y'all to take 2 seconds. Go to the YouTube channel, at The Real Jacques Talk. Subscribe, like, leave a comment for us. We got some big things cracking in May. I don't want you to miss out on them. So, if you subscribe, like, you'll be in the mix, and all that content will come to you. We got some big things. We'll be making some announcements probably in a couple of weeks about what to expect. Some I've never done, some I'm real, real geeked about. And I know you guys will enjoy it. You can also follow the show on IG at The Real Jacques Talk, and you can hit me up on Twitter at JJT Journalist. I am Jean-Jacques Taylor's the handle. Don't forget, if you think you follow me, you don't, because somebody I used to date deleted my account. That's another story, though.
Well, check it out. We 3 minutes in. We 5x5 for the light is red, and we 5x5. 3 minutes and 8 seconds counting. How about that?
I am glad to hear that. That always puts a smile on my face, because the alternative to that is sorrow.
Let me tell you,
from firsthand experience.
For sure.
That
I'll be kicking stuff. There we go. Anyway.
If you're ever involved in an accident, and it's not your fault, somebody else's negligence has caused you some harm, what you got to do is pick up that phone, call 972-934-8900. And when the people at Greening Law pick up, you simply say, hello, here's my situation. And I'm telling you, if they bring you on as a client, it's been a lucky day for you. Real talk. It's been a great day for you, because they handle every single solitary thing related to your case, so you can focus on two things and two things only: healing and renewal. Get your mind right, get your body right, and get your life back. That's what they want, all right? That's what they desire, and that's what they take care of. So, if you need a doctor, guess what? Greening Law will find you a doctor, set up the appointment. All you got to do is show up. How about this? You need a specialist. They will find you a specialist, set up the appointment. All you got to do is show up. Now, understand this. That phone call I told you to make to 972-934-8900, that thing is free. Don't cost you nothing. Zero, zip, zilch, nada. Why? They don't get paid unless you get paid. It's really that simple. You can't find a better deal than that. Seriously. And when you go through this process, it can be long, it can be tedious, it can be scary, it can be intimidating. It can be a lot of uncomfortable things. But when you got Green and Law with you, you just sit back and you say, hey, I'm going to follow your lead. And they say, cool, I got the flashlight, let's roll. They tell you when to stop, when to start, when to crawl, when to walk, when to run, when to turn left, when to turn right, when to hold tight, when to retreat, when to attack. They tell you all that stuff. That's why Grinning Law is the place you need to call, 972-934-8900. If you're ever involved in an accident, it's not your fault. Somebody else's negligence has hurt you. Give Grinning Law an opportunity to ease your pain and suffering. Now, dog, I paid very close attention to the Mavericks game the other day. They were playing the Jazz. Jazz ain't that good, but the Mavericks are playing pretty well. It's the stretch run. And to me, this is just me now, just me. I saw something that said, hey, this could be a pivotal moment. And it wasn't it was an exciting play, but it wasn't a huge play of the game. But it was the third quarter. And here's the situation that I think everybody's got to be aware of with the Mavericks. They're in a tight hunt right now for sixth place in the Western Conference. And it's a nightly battle, man. Right now, they didn't even play yesterday, and they dropped from 6th to 8th. And here's what we have to be concerned with. Phoenix is in 6th place, 42-29. The Mavericks hold a tiebreaker over Phoenix. Sacramento is in 7th place at 41-29. Dallas, 8th place, 41-29. They got two games coming up with Sacramento this week, back-to-back in Sacramento, which will be huge in terms of, one, determining how they do, and two, determining whether they get the tiebreaker over Sacramento. Okay, so that being said, man, they're playing Utah. And they are putting on a pretty good show against Utah. And then this happened, man. Luka, I promise you, dog, I have not seen this but maybe two or three times since Luka has been in Dallas. Luka dove on the floor for a loose ball, bro, near midcourt. You laugh, dog. I'm serious about that.
Yeah.
That man dove for a loose ball at half court, and it led to a then he threw it from his back, and it led to a pass to Kyrie, and then he threw a lob to, I think, Gafford, who had 10 dunks in a game. If he was playing 2K, I'd tell him to change the settings. But that's not the play I'm talking about. That was one of several plays that electrified the crowd, had the bench jumping around, bouncing around. The play I'm talking about, man, happened with 4:34 left in the third quarter. And the Mavericks are already up by about 15. And it becomes a 2-on-1 break with Luka and Kyrie. Mm-hmm. As they near the bucket, just caught me by surprise. Luka kind of looks right away from Kyrie, throws like a, I almost want to call it like a hook shot, but it's a lob. He throws a hook lob to 6'2 Kyrie, who bounces up, throws that thing down. And this is the reason I say that's the moment that galvanized the Mavericks to me. Because Luka does this funky little dance after the pass and after Kyrie dunks it. He's hyped. Now, Mark Cuban, who's always hyped, is going crazy. But the entire Mavericks bench is bouncing around, holding each other up like they're about to all have a heart attack. And to me, it was that moment where your two superstars kind of came together at that one particular moment, and they were like, you know what? We got a shot. I don't know if we're going to win the championship. I don't know what we're going to do, but we got a shot. Because they're finally kind of figuring out how to play with each other, how to play off each other. And to me, that whole little sequence was just a moment where we might look back and say, you know what? That kind of brought that team really cohesiveness together, and maybe they can grow from that. You believe in moments like that?
Yeah, I thought I saw that play, and to see Kyrie just bang it, boom, it was like, it made me jump too. Like, what the hell? Okay. You know, just about every NBA player can dunk, but he got up. He right. caught the pass, and you don't see him do many alley-oops like that. But the biggest play for me was Luka diving for the ball. Because Luka, for Luka to play all out, that means he's giving something up to Kyrie. Where, like, Luka, we don't want to say he don't hustle, But he's saving his energy because he shoots so much. He handles the ball so much. And he'd be so tired at the end of the game that, you know, a lot of those shots that go in stop going in for him. So even though he's handling the ball all the time, I think he didn't die for loose balls because he was trying to save his energy. But if he playing all out, he know he can lean on Kyrie. And that simple act of him diving means that I'm going all out. I can lean on this guy. So we got a chance to whoop y'all ass now because I trust that this guy can take it home. I don't have to do all the heavy lifting. That's what that one dive right. ball said to me.
So it's going to be interesting now to see because they've had they ended up with a big win over Utah, and now they've had a few days off. And so now they've been able to practice before they head out to Sacramento tomorrow. They got the Jazz tomorrow. And then Tuesday, first night of a back-to-back, they get second night of a back-to-back, they get the Kings. Then on Friday, they play the Kings again. Then Sunday, they play the Rockets, which normally you would say, well, that's a dub. But the Rockets, last I checked, had won 9 out of 10. But these next three games, if you just focus on them for the Mavericks, huge. You need to beat Utah because Utah ain't no good. And then at worst, you need a split with Sacramento. Obviously, at best, you beat them twice. And the worst case scenario is they beat you twice. So that game on Tuesday is the big one, even though it's on the second night of a back-to-back, because that'll mean Friday whether you plan really to try to do something really special and take them both, or whether you're trying to avoid getting swept, which would be disaster in terms of the standings. Because what you want, bro, is to avoid the play-in game. Ain't nobody interested in the play-in tournament or, you know, all of that. You just want to be the sixth seed and deal with whoever you got to deal with. But all those extra games just for the right to play Denver or, Oklahoma City, yeah, that's for the birds. And with that, my man, let's shift into a topic I've been trying to get at for a couple of weeks. Now, I don't know how we came up with this decision, but we were talking about the draft, some draft, and I was doing some research for a project I'm working on, and the Cowboys' approach to the 1995 draft was just so ridiculous, it deserved another conversation. And you might literally sit to yourself and go, Taylor, 1995 was a long time ago. Why are we talking about this? Well, one reason is it's the draft. Another reason is the 95 draft from a thought process was so bad. I believe it set the tone for one of the reasons this franchise has been unable to win a championship or get to the conference finals in the 30 years since then. Because much of your organization has to do with thought process. And this thing was so flawed and the results were so bad, it set the franchise back immeasurably, in my opinion.
Run it down.
Before
Run it
we
down.
Get, I was oh. going to say. All right, here we go. The 1995 Cowboys draft. First off, I'm going to run through the names. And then I'm going to give you kind of like my overall thought. And then you can give me an overall thought. And then I'll dive into some details about why it was easily, perhaps really the worst. There's a couple of contenders, but the worst draft the Cowboys have had since Jerry Jones bought the team. And that's the 1995 draft. They're coming off a trip to the NFC Championship game where they lost to San Francisco. The Cowboys are loaded, all right? They've won 2 out of 3 Super Bowls. And here's the draft picks they took. In the second round, 46 overall, Sherman Williams, running back. Then in the second round, 59th overall, tight end Kendall Watkins. In the second round, 63rd overall guard, Shane Hanna.
Oh, my goodness.
Stop laughing, man. In the third round, 92 overall, Charlie Williams, defensive back.
Charlie. Charlie
Weed. In the fourth round, they took Eric Bjornsson, 110th overall tight end.
All right.
Then they took with the 129th pick cornerback Alundis Bryce. With the 130th pick, they took linebacker Link Harden out of Oklahoma State. In the fifth round, they took USC wide receiver Ed Hervey. Remember that name. Mm-hmm. In the fifth round, they took Illinois linebacker Dana Howard. Oh. And then in the seventh round, they took North Carolina defensive end Oscar Sturgis. That's the 1995 draft class.
Hold up. Let me take a quick, very quick exit round. All right, get off, check your tires, get back on. Dog, the reason I'm laughing and I'm smiling because 95, that was the year that my boy Jacques Taylor had that pull. That was the year that I got to go to Valley Ranch the first time. And that shit was cool because we went, I might have went twice that year because we went when nobody was there. And then we went when Barry Switzer and Dion, I got to see Dion, Nate, all them guys. And yeah, so that's why I'm kind of tripping about 95 because it all came back to me. That was the first, you know, you was covering the Cowboys, but you was in there when you took me over there. You know, remember I had the big ass military trench coat on, and then Charles Haley comes out and he looks at you and he goes, "Jacques, you got a bodyguard? You need a damn bodyguard." I was like, "Yeah, I think that dude's crazy." Yeah, he was kind of, but you know, I saw that and I really didn't say nothing. I just kind of observed, and that's when Josie Karp was there. Damn. And I just remember that because it was the first time, and it was all them people there. And I remember Dion was like, "What's up, player?" I said, "How you doing?" And he said, "He ain't that big, is he?" I said, "Hell no, but that's Dion right there." So that was kind of cool. That was a quick exit round, and I hope you appreciate that because I appreciated that. I thought that was cool right there.
No, you know what's interesting about that is I don't remember none of that.
Yeah, it wasn't your first time, and you wasn't a Cowboy fan. I was, so it was
what
like,
I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's why it's interesting.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying. My boy, you was in. You know, I got that first call from the Super Bowl. Man, I'm at the Super Bowl. The shit was going crazy in the back, and then you know, a couple of years later, you know, what I'm saying, hey, not only is you in there, but you got me up in there. So there you go. So it's all good. Anyway,
now here's the details of the 1995 draft. Those players, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. I should have done that. Those 10 players played in a total of 283 games. They combined for 2 starts. No Pro Bowls, no All-Pros, 6 touchdowns.
Damn.
No one played 100 games in the NFL. Now, here's a little bit of a trick question. Can you name the best player easily from this draft?
Shake Williams?
That would be the answer that you probably should give. The real answer is I told you it's a trick question. Easily the best player from this draft is Ed Hervey. Ed Hervey went up to Canada, caught 476 passes, 6,715 yards.
All right.
In 2001, he caught 77 for 1,447 yards and 12 touchdowns. Ended up winning 2 Grey Cups with Edmonton and is now the GM, currently the GM of the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
I'm sorry, man. I'm the king of useless knowledge, but that was like useless as hell. I'm not finna pull no shit from no Canadian league. It hurt, but I'm glad it was a tricky question because we talking about for the Cowboy. I was thinking about for the Cowboy, but I never would have pulled Ed Hervey like that. I just remember he was lanky. He was lanky and he was fast as hell. That's what I remember about him.
We're going to get to Ed Hervey. But first, let's run through these players. So you got Sherman Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And, let's start with this. The reason this is such a bad draft, and it's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard of, is the Cowboys, and I heard this from multiple people, shortly after the process and then long after the process. And one of those people was Larry Lacewell, who's my guy, former, you know, head of scouting. And Lace said, we just had so many starters that anybody we drafted wasn't going to be able to crack our starting lineup. And you know what, people? There's nothing wrong with that. But they decided we're going to draft backups. Nobody does that.
The 49ers did that.
Well, that was dumb too.
That was the same about the same time. Dexter Carter from
Florida State.
Florida State, the little bitty running back. They drafted him as the beard. You know, that was the okay, thought process. Now,
You got to go deeper though.
Yeah,
it's not that you draft backup. If you draft Dexter Carter, you're saying, oh, we got whoever their running back was, Roger Craig or whoever it was.
Ricky Waters, probably.
He's really good. So in case he gets hurt, we need to draft a guy capable of filling in.
Yeah.
That's different than drafting guys who, when you call them up and say, hey, Joe, Cowboys took you in the fifth round. Really? I thought I was going to be undrafted free agent. I didn't think I was going to play. Let me cancel these applications for grad school. I didn't know I was good enough to play in the league. That's what the Cowboys drafted. And that's why it fell apart. Yeah, you can draft guys who aren't good enough to start. That happens all the time. And then in 2 years when they leave, boom, you got instant starter there ready to go. That's different. They drafted people who weren't ever going to be NFL starters. If you start with Sherman Williams, he had a chance because he came out of Alabama, good career at Alabama. But with Emmitt Smith, there was really never a whole lot of opportunity because we all know Emmitt never liked to give up the ball. Under no circumstance should another running back touch the ball other than Emmitt. Sherman Williams, he did have one good game, so to speak. 23 carries, 90 yards against Washington in a 23-7 win. I think Emmitt got sick early in the first quarter, and Shake had to handle the rest of the game. The interesting thing about it is they traded out of the first round. If they had just hit on the 3 second-round picks they took, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. Because 3 second-round picks, 3 of the top 63, that's cool. Nothing wrong with that. So you get Sherman Williams, and then you draft Kendall Watkins, who Joe has informed us was the 300-pound tight end.
Yeah, 305.
All he was
was
another blocker, correct? Yeah. He was never going to factor in the passing game. He was to help you block. Nobody takes a blocking tight end when you had the best line in the game in the second round because nobody was going to take Kendall Watkins.
They talked about moving him to center, too, eventually. That's something that they were saying back then. But
you know what?
It happened. It happened.
They were saying that back then. If you're going to take a guy and move him like that, you damn sure don't take him with the 59th pick overall because ain't nobody else interested in taking him. And so Kendall Watkins tore his knee up in his second season. Never played again.
Yeah.
He played 16 games in the NFL. Caught one pass for 8 yards. Shane Hanna. Now, why did you giggle when I mentioned Shane Hanna?
Because Shane didn't want to play. He said he wanted to drive truck. And me and Shane could have switched positions. We could have switched up, dog. I would let me play for the Cowboys. You go drive my truck. I'm good. I mean, I'm a proud truck driver, Shane. But damn, Shane. Come on now. Shane just didn't want to play.
The interesting thing about Shane Hanna is he was a 4-year starter at Michigan State. Not like Michigan State wasn't no good program.
Mm-hmm.
He 4-year starter at Michigan State at left tackle. They moved him to guard because they said, you don't have the foot speed. We're going to put you at guard where people can't get away from you. It's going to be fantastic. And you're right. Shane Hanna showed up in camp overweight. Not grossly overweight, but overweight. And I'm never going to forget this as long as I live. It's training camp 95. They're eating breakfast in the cafeteria or lunch. I think they're eating lunch. And we got to eat lunch in the cafeteria with the players. A lot of times we talk with them. We set up interviews to have over lunch. And I never will forget Hudson Hauk walking up to Shane Hanna while he was getting ready to get something to eat. And he told him, put that fucking tray down and get your fat ass to the training room. And my mouth was agape. Because I had never seen a real NFL coach talk to a real NFL player like that. And at that point, Shane, tail between legs, slouched off to wherever he did. And I believe later on, he left. Like, I'm leaving camp. And they had to talk him into coming back.
Yep, he came back.
And shortly thereafter, he tore the meniscus in his knee. And Shane Hanna never played a game in the NFL. He went to camp with Carolina and Oakland the next 2 years. Never latched on with a team. And, you know, so think about it. They had 3 second-round picks. 2 of them combined for 1 game. 1 of them was a career backup. I mean, it's just ridiculous, man. 3rd-round pick, Charlie Williams. Charlie Williams had the best career, had the second-best career out of this draft in the NFL. He played 81 games.
Charlie Williams.
Was a solid special teams guy. And Charlie Williams understood from the jump, I am fortunate to be in the NFL. I'm going to save every single nickel I make in the NFL.
He was out of Illinois, right?
He was out of Bowling Green.
Bowling Green, that's right. Number 40, yeah.
Charlie Williams had no idea he was going to be drafted. Okay, think about this, folks. Charlie Williams is drafted in the 3rd round. When we're on the phone with him doing the post during the press conference, you know, you draft him, then they get on the phone, you have a little press conference on the phone, then they show up then the next day and you do it again in person. Every question is to every player is, hey, so where'd you think you're going to get drafted? Charlie Williams, as my mama would say, fixed his lips to say, oh, I didn't think I was going to get drafted. Certainly didn't think I was going to get drafted before the 7th round. So I was outside playing basketball, hanging out with my friends. You can't take a guy in the 3rd round who thinks he's not getting drafted. That's how you end up with the worst draft class in franchise history. Under the Jerry Jones era.
Yeah, he contributed on special teams mostly.
No, he was a good special teams.
Pretty good special teams player. Yeah.
But he contributed one of the biggest stories I ever broke. It's one of my favorite stories because it's about being where you're supposed to be, so to speak, when you're supposed to be there. I was hanging out at Valley Ranch, and I was I can't remember where I was going, but I was walking through the hall. The building was basically empty. And I will never, ever forget this. Charlie, I was by the locker room and I was walking. Oh, okay. This is where I was. It's all coming back to me now because they changed the configuration. The media offices for the Dallas Morning News, we used to have a little cubicle, so to speak, a little office, but it was, check this out, man. The office, it was 2 people. And the office was literally about 4 feet wide and about 10 feet long. It's like a jail cell. But that's where we worked. I was leaving my office, probably walking toward the vending machines because it was late in the afternoon. It was as soon as you walked into the building from the players' parking lot. So the players had to pass our little offices to get to their cars.
Yeah, that's where I saw Dion. I was sitting in the office. Yeah.
I'm walking to the vending machine, I believe. Charlie Williams is walking from that area back toward the locker room so he can go to his car. He has some dry cleaning over his shoulder for whatever reason. And I said, and I passed him. I said, hey, what's up, dog? And I was just making small talk, the smallest of small talk. Because players used to hang out at the Cowboys Cafe, which is a little restaurant bar about a mile, like half a mile from the complex. And I said, hey, you finna go hang out at the cafe? And Charlie Williams looked me in the eye and said, nah, bro, you ain't gonna find me there, man. They told us not to go there. And I said, what you mean they told y'all not to go there? No, man, they told us not to go there. They did not want to see us hanging out there no more. And you know me, bro, I'm finna listen to what they say. I said, oh, okay, see you later, dog. I turned the corner. My chest started beating fast. And I was like, I went, circled over to the vending machine, got what I was getting, walked real fast back to my office and called the office and said, I think I have a story. I'm about to call Jerry. I'll call you back. Called Jerry Jones's office, told his secretary, Miss Marilyn, I hate to bother you. This is a pretty big emergency. Something I just found out. I need to run past Jerry. And so she got me on the phone with Jerry probably about an hour later. I said, Jerry, it's my understanding you have banned the players from the cafe, from the Cowboys Cafe. And I just wanted to make sure that that's accurate and why you banned them. And he said, well, I just don't want them to. He said something to the effect of, well, I just don't want them to go there right now. We've had a lot of incidents up there. I don't want anybody to accidentally get in trouble, something like that. It didn't matter. I broke that story, and I was that was front page across the sports section because it's right when Eric Williams and Michael Irvin had all those issues, and he just banned them from the cafe. So that was a huge deal. But it was all because Charlie Williams told me they couldn't go there, and he was going to follow the rules even if everybody else wasn't.
Gotcha.
Eric Bjornsson. He was probably the best player from that draft class. Caught 147 passes for 1,384 yards, six touchdowns.
Number 86. Yes, sir. Yep.
Played 82 games, won more than Charlie Williams, and developed a rapport with Troy Aikman. Troy Aikman really liked him. Like, they stay in contact today. Eric might have been a little ahead of his time. He was like a Jay Novacek clone. That's why they drafted him.
Yep.
He just wasn't quite good enough.
Former quarterback. He was a good receiver. He was a quarterback in Washington, too.
Now, like I told you, he was a Jay Novacek clone now.
Yeah.
And he played, but you know, he played 5 years in Dallas, got one more in New England, and then he was out of the game. And so that's one of the things about this draft class. Sometimes guys don't fit with you, but they go other places and have good careers for whatever reason. No one on this draft class went anywhere after Dallas and had a good career. I mean, it was just done, man. And that's why it's one of the worst draft classes. I think it's the worst draft class of the Jerry Jones era. There's one contender that we'll talk about in sometime real soon. But that's it. Alundis Bryce played 2 years. Was kind of a role player as a cornerback.
Wasn't he out of Ole Miss or something?
Yep, out of Ole Miss.
Number 29.
Yes, he was. I thought he changed his number at some point.
Yeah, he did. I think Hannah was 73.
63.
Okay. Maybe I'm thinking of John Hannah.
But don't ever confuse them two.
Right.
But then Link Harden in the fourth round. I think he got cut in training camp.
Yeah.
Hervey was inactive all year after breaking his fibula in the preseason.
Yeah, 81.
And then Dana Howard played one game, and Oscar Sturgis played one game.
Dana Howard is –
actually, Dana Howard got 19 games.
Yeah, Dana Howard is the classic example of a badass linebacker in college that – didn't do it in the NFL because, man, he was all world at Illinois.
Yeah, 6 foot 238 out of East St. Louis.
Yeah.
Which tells you he was rugged.
Tough. He was tough, yeah.
You know, played well at Illinois.
Yep, that whole team was good. Bruce Hardy. And then they had a defensive end that was pretty good. I can't remember, but, yeah, that whole Illinois team was pretty good on defense. They couldn't hold the Buckeyes, but they was pretty good. There was always some good game between them and Eddie George. Was pretty good. Yeah, that was a good thing.
But that's the case of the 1995 Cowboys draft. It was just one of the worst drafts. And what happened is 3 years later, as all your starters from, pick a guy, Novacek or anybody you want to come up with, as those guys faded or left through free agency or got hurt and retired, the guys who should have been replacing them from 95 or 96, they couldn't play. And that's how you ended up with a team falling apart and going from the highs that the Cowboys experienced to the lows that they experienced for leading into those three straight 5-11 seasons, because the drafts were just so bad they couldn't replace the talent that they lost.
Yeah, that's some good stuff right there, because I didn't realize that about Charlie Williams. I thought he was like an underachieving, pretty good special teams guy. But, hell, he didn't even know he was getting drafted. They just drafted him to play in the third round to play in special teams.
Yeah, that's the damnest thing
ever. Yeah, yeah, that's crazy.
The whole thought process was flawed. And,
yeah.
That's why that class of 1995 is one of the worst.
Yeah, you don't draft like that anymore. If you got – you know, whereas if you don't have CeeDee Lamb, if you thought like the 95 team, like the 95 draft, you wouldn't have CeeDee Lamb right now.
Because, oh, hell no.
Yeah, he was extra.
He can't start.
Yeah, he was extra. He can't start. We don't need him. Well, that's not necessarily true now. You know,
here was their other dumb thought process. I mean, you just have to go, how could so many smart people make these kinds of dumb decisions? That was also really at the very start of the salary cap. So if you want to give them a little bit of a pass, you could say they didn't really understand the salary cap because it was brand new.
Yeah.
Even though Jerry was the main one advocating a salary cap. They were also like, well, we got Troy, we got Emmitt, we got Michael, we got Haley, we got all these stars. We can't really afford to pay first round picks.
Right.
If, you know, and the reality is, nobody has ever made a bad decision taking a good player. You know? Because it never dawned on them that, oh, we'll take these good players and maybe we'll just move these great players out because they're not going to be great forever.
Yeah, it always depends. To me, it depends on what position. You know, you won't, if you got a first-round quarterback already, you ain't going to draft a first-round quarterback. But if you got a running back, you know, if you got a running back that's good, you can draft a first-round quarterback. He gets some production because a quarterback can only contribute one way. The other guy can contribute other ways. You can move him around, even switch positions if you got to. But, yeah, you know, like we always say, another good defensive back ain't going to hurt nobody. Another good defensive end. You can't say I'm locked in at that position and don't draft him. But you live and you
just
learn.
Just take good players.
You know. Well, you live and you learn. And they damn sure learn, so.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. But that's our trip back to the 1995 draft. And we'll take, we'll examine a few other draft classes in the coming weeks leading up to the 2024 draft. Right now, though, let's take a trip around the block, bro. Our trip around the block today is brought to you by, how about this, Smokey John's Barbecue, 1820 West Mockingbird, home of the Jam Session Bowl. My boy Lamar, he did us one better, man. He didn't go by Smokey John. He went and picked up the rub at HEB. That man sent me a picture of some ribs he put on. He said, man, the rub took these ribs I made to a whole nother place. He said they were fantastic. I had people raving about them. And it was all because of the rub. He goes, decided to smoke some ribs, and I used my mom's homemade marinade and Smokey John's rub. Man, they came out good. Shout out to JJT for hipping me to Smokey John's. Get over there and try the Jam Session Bowl as well. See, we be telling you the truth, man. Smokey John's be throwing down. Food, the rub, it's all fantastic. And right now, I want to make sure I tell y'all this before I forget. Smokey John's, you know how they take care of y'all. They got the Easter pack. Because why? Easter's coming up next Sunday. 2 whole chickens, 2 pounds of sliced honey smoked ham, 2 half-gallon sides. Some folks want that mac and cheese. Some folks want them mashed potatoes and greens. 1 gallon. Sweet tea and lemonade, 1 dozen rolls, 1 pint of barbecue sauce. That is what? Love in your mouth. Woo! fantastic. Smokey John's. Get the Easter pack. All you got to do is give them a call. They will take care of the rest. Or you can go to SmokeyJohns.com. Go online. Order that thing. It's all good. They would love to see. They would love to serve. Why? Because the food is fantastic. It is to live for. Now, if you roll by the storefront, go ahead and tell them you want the Jam Session Bowl real quickly. That Jam Session Bowl. Mac and cheese base. That's how Joe got down. Mashed potato base. That's usually how I get down. Your choice. 2 out of 5 smoked meats. I rock the brisket and the sausage most of the time. And then all that stuff you find on a loaded baked potato. Sour cream, chives, onion, bacon bits, butter, cheese. All that good stuff, man. They put it on top of it. And then they say, hey, you want us to drizzle it with sauce? Or drench it with sauce? I typically go with the drizzle, but either way, it's fantastic. I'm telling you, it's enough for 2. Easy. You got a little shorty, 3 of y'all can eat off of it. No problemo at all. That's the Smokey John's Jam Session Bowl. Get it. It is love in your mouth. It is to live for. Trust me on that. And then call them up. Tell them you want the Easter pack. You can thank me later. No problem.
I got a new strategy for Smokey John.
What's that?
I'm gonna get that Jam Session Bowl to go.
Oh.
We gonna do that. We gonna, you know, that's for both of us with that mac and cheese. But I'm gonna get them doggone the catfish.
Alright.
Yeah, cause my man said catfish was pretty good. I didn't try none cause I was tearing that bowl up. But I'm gonna get that. That catfish looked great. She said it was great too.
That's a Matt McClain special. You can't go wrong with it.
Yeah.
It's all good. I had a great journalism conversation yesterday. I'm going to share with y'all. Had it with my man, Chuck Cooperstein, the voice of the Mavs. We went back and forth quite a bit. Are you familiar with what Kim Mulkey, the coach at LSU, the women's basketball coach at LSU, did yesterday, bro?
Yeah, she went off on Pat Ford. Is that right? Pat Ford, because he was doing some dirty stuff. That's what she said. She kind of chopped him up.
She really went off on Kent Babb. He's writing a story. Pat Ford just was saying that a story was coming out.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But it made for a great journalism conversation. And I had, like I said, I had it with Chuck Cooperstein, who I respect quite a bit. And here's the gist of it. Kent Babb is a sensational features reporter. Typically, he writes features for the Washington Post. He has written a couple books, one of which is fantastic. It's about a inner city public school in New Orleans that won several state championships in a row, dealing with all the stuff you got to deal with in inner city New Orleans while beating a bunch of private schools. That had a lot more, a lot more things going for him. So that's who he is. Terrific features reporter. And essentially, she was trying to get ahead of the story. And she's like, hey, this guy's tried to interview me for, I'm paraphrasing here. This guy's tried to interview me for 2 years. I refused to talk to him. And then on Tuesday of this week, he sent me some questions and told me I had until Thursday to answer them, or the story's going to run. I don't like him. I didn't want to talk to him because he wrote a story on Brian Kelly that I considered a hit piece, where he took some shots at Brian Kelly, and I just don't want to talk to him. I think he's a bad reporter, and he's the reason why people don't trust the media.
She also accused him of calling some former players saying, "Hey, I'm here with Coach Mulkey in Baton Rouge, so you can talk to me." So she was saying he was lying to people. She was giving some direct statements saying that he was lying about stuff. Not that he was a bad guy. She supposedly had evidence that he was doing stuff.
Now, let me say this. So that's the gist of the story right there. The story has not come out yet. I happened to hang out with a friend of mine the other day. Who knows Kent and was telling me about this story before the Mulkey stuff even happened. So when the Mulkey stuff happened, I was like, oh, damn, okay. And he was telling me, well, Let me say it like this. A lot of people in power have journalism confused. Okay? And here's what I mean. Because I put several tweets out about this. Journalism 101. And we'll, if I ask Kim Mulkey, hey, Kim, I'm doing a story on you. Here's what it's about. That's typically how it works. I'm doing a story on you. Here's the gist of the story I think I'm going to write. And you have to say you think you're going to write because as you do work and you interview people, your story might change. For the better, for the worse, it's just different. Now, if Kim refuses and says, hey, I don't want to participate, that's fine. That's her right. She doesn't have to participate. But that don't mean the story's not getting written just because you don't want it written or you don't want it to participate. And some people in power think that that's the case. If I say I don't want it written, then you're supposed to say, oh, okay, cool, I ain't going to write it. It don't work like that when you're a public figure. Number two, and Chuck Cooperstein had his biggest problem was it's unfair for you to tell somebody they have 2 days to respond to your story or you're going to run it. Now, we were on the Twitter space, so we remained civil. If it was face-to-face, I say, Chuck, you know I love you, but that's some bullshit. And it's not even Kent Babb. She's the one who said he'd been trying to interview me for 2 years. Let me tell y'all how this works. The first time you say, hey, Kim, this is a story I think I'm going to write. I'd love to talk to you about it, get your voice in it. No, Kent, I don't like you. I don't want to do the story. Okay, that's fine. I appreciate it. I appreciate your time. I go out and I find out whatever information I find out. And I go to myself. I go, you know what, Joe? Joe's my boy. Man, if I write this, Mulkey going to take some heat. I didn't know this. Let me go back and tell her, hey, I got some stuff that you probably want to comment on. So you go back to Mulkey. You say, hey, Kim, I found out some stuff. I really would like to talk to you and run this stuff I got past you. Now, I don't care what you got past me or not even that. She might just say, hey, I told you, I don't want to talk about the story. Okay, that's fine. Write the story. These types of stories, typically your lawyers go over them. When you turn it in, the newspaper's lawyers will look at it and see if you've got any information in there that you could be sued for. And in this case, there wasn't apparently none, or he changed whatever it was. But he might still go back and say, hey, this is the last time I'm telling you. The story's going to run probably on such and such day. If you want to comment, here's some questions we got. You have until Thursday to answer them. And that was Chuck's beef, that you didn't give enough time. Well, if I've been tracking you down for 2 years, man, I don't owe you any more time. I don't think there's anything ethically wrong with that. If it was important to you, you would make time for it. Nobody's that busy, even if you got a tournament in time. If it was important to you, but clearly it's not, and that's her right. It don't have to be important to her. But the biggest thing is, you know, to what she did, man, and trying to get ahead of the story, is that she brought a whole lot of attention to it that a lot of people might not even known about it. Now they all sitting around waiting for it to see why she's so mad. I think the other thing about journalism is, you know, she hadn't read the story because he's not going to send her the story. So how does she know that there's all this negative stuff in there? She's just kind of assuming. I've heard what the story is about. I've heard that one of the things that she was upset about is that he talked to her father, and she hadn't talked to her father in decades. And so she was mad that he talked to her father. But, you know, when you're doing profiles on people, man, people are complex. Nobody's all good for the most part. Nobody's all bad. People are multifaceted and have different sides. And if you're doing a feature on Kim Mulkey, of course you would talk to her former players, her former stars. You probably try to get in touch with Brittany Griner and other folks and see what they say about Kim, good, bad, or indifferent. That's just part of doing a well-rounded feature. And yeah, you offer anonymity to some people because they say this or something like this. Man, I would tell you this, but I don't want Kim going around getting me out of coaching or ruining my ability to get another job or any of that. So I ain't gonna say nothing. Or you got to use me as a source. Okay, fine. And then the way sources work is, Joe tells me something, he's a source. I go verify what he told me with two or three other people, make sure it's true, and then I go with it. And then there's multiple sources, because very, very few things happen in a vacuum. But it was a great journalism conversation I had with Chuck yesterday.
Yeah, but she was talking about some of that, but she was accusing him of being dirty and how he got information. See, all that stuff you said is true, but the other accusations was that he was lying, saying different stuff. And you know what? If you ain't talked to
him. She said he was lying. She said that he had contacted some of her assistant coaches and said he was with Mulkey.
He was in Baton Rouge with Mulkey. Yeah, yeah. Now, and
You know how I heard that? And that's why at a certain point I told Chuck, hey, we'll find out a lot of answers once the story comes out. You know how I heard that story, man? And it's because I'm a journalist. Now, I'm not saying, because I don't know what Kent did or did not do. But when she said that, it reminded me of, like, if I had called somebody while I was in Jackson with working on the Dion book, and I said, hey, I'm in Jackson with Dion working on this book. Can I talk to you? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's always nuanced. See, if you say I'm in Jackson, but it's intended nuance and it's unintended. It's like if you intended to misguide somebody by saying, hey, I'm in Jackson with her, and you kind of trying to hit that it's okay to talk to her. You know, everybody ain't forthright. It's some slick shit going on sometime to get some stories, you know. But that's what I'm saying. And so I'm kind of in the middle on this. Like you say, it's all going to work out. But I want to make sure that we cover the ground where you was talking about reporters being on the up and up and all that. That's what you talking about. But what she trying to say is he ain't on the up and up. So I'm not really taking sides. I'm just like looking down the middle and saying this shit going to come to light. Kind of like you just said, but I just want to make sure we putting out what this dude did. Because I don't know.
Well, that's what she says he did.
Yeah.
And that's why I say that I think the truth will come out, because once the story comes out, he'll be on a lot of talk shows and there'll be a he said, she said.
Yeah, well.
She said, last thing she said is she's hired a defamation team, and she'll sue the Washington Post if there's anything wrong about her. And, you know, man, my whole reaction to that as a journalist is, do you think the Washington Post lawyers aren't fact-checking everything in a story like this? And they are.
I think homeboy is dirty. That's what I think. I think he did some dirty stuff. I don't have the knowledge you have, but I just think, If you talk to me right now, if you're going to do a story on me right now, you go talk to my dad, you ain't going to get nothing. Me and him, it's kind of like him. We've talked, but our relationship is of such as that you're not going. I mean, what are you going to talk to him for? The only reason you talk, if you're talking to him, you're just irritating the shit out of me. That's all that is right there. Because he don't know me like that. You understand what I'm saying? He know I'm his son. He knows my name. He come see me, but the experiences that I have and the way I am, he don't know me like that. So you talking to him, it just irritates shit out of me. That's probably how she feel about him. She ain't talked to her dad in decades.
There's no doubt that that's why. That's amongst the reasons why she's aggravated.
Yeah, I'd be aggravated too.
But you know, the interesting thing as a reporter is. Mm-hmm. You're trying to, and I say this all the time, especially now. And, I use it as a tool all the time. If you're writing a feature on Kim Mulkey, you can find out quite a bit from her father about her. And what you find out is not necessarily, you can find out how she was as a kid until they became estranged. It doesn't have to be negative, but I would submit to you that her relationship with her father has something to do, good or bad, with how she is today. And you take the conversation and the information that you learned from her father, and you talk to other people who were close to her when she was young, and it'll show you the multifaceted, when you put it all together, it should show you the multifaceted person that she is today. You know, but we won't know till the story comes out how she was portrayed. Father might have said, oh, she's the greatest person ever. We just couldn't get along because we so much alike.
He ain't going to say
that. You never know.
What I'm saying is, look, I ain't trying to start no beef with that situation because it's always been like that with me and you. There's different views because it's your job. You know what I'm saying? It's things that, like, I'll give you an example. Like, when Parcells got hired, he was like, I don't know about him. He don't like the media. Right? That was the first thing you told me. Well, he don't really like media. Well, I didn't give a damn because I'm not the media. So that's my point is, that's why I'm kind of hung up on the dad shit and all that. So I understand it's your job. I'm just going from a personal view that, like, I don't care because that's not my job. But that's why, so if that makes sense to you, that's what I'm trying to say. So I ain't trying to start a, hey, this is what the way you should think and all that, but I'm just going, this is what I think, and I'm not the media, so I don't have to do that, but I trust Clarence, Calvin, Jacques, Chris Perkins, the reporters that I know, that I can call them and say, man, what the hell are you talking about? The rest of them, they go fly a kite. Be nice. I don't know.
Well, you know, it's always very interesting. Mm-hmm. And so part of what I try to do when the situation warrants is take people behind how reporters should act, how they go about gathering information, why they go about gathering information a certain way.
Yeah. It's good stuff. You know, it's good stuff for sure. It's good stuff. I'm just like, man, I ain't pushing back so much as venting. Like, man, screw him. You're going to talk to my dad. I don't talk to my dad. Yeah. I don't like that bullshit.
But that's all part of doing a thorough job. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to say, it's not even I used to. In the book I wrote about Deion and his team, I said, you can't understand a man if you don't understand how he grew up. Like, if you don't understand how he grew up and the nature of his relationship with his father, who's a drug user, who he had to take care of, then you ain't really going to understand him. And so all those things, are when you're writing profiles, they're all designed to help you understand why the person is the way that they are. And you're not really putting a judgment on who and what they are. You're just explaining this is why they are the way that they are. And I give you the example I use with Darren Woodson all the time. Is his dad, his dad was in his life, but they didn't have a good relationship. Dad didn't live at home with him. His parents were divorced. And I think I may have told y'all this story one time. I asked him, I said, hey, can you go do this on a certain day? And he said, nah, I told my son I'd be at his baseball game and I can't miss it because and he just said this. I didn't even ask him. He just said, you know, my dad broke so many promises to me. I just never break a promise to my kid. If I tell them I'm going to be there somewhere for them, then I do it because my dad broke so many promises to me. I just vowed I'd never do it when I got to be an adult.
That's him. That's him sharing that with you. That ain't right. You ain't had to dig that. You ain't had to dig for that. So some people want their stuff to be private, is what I'm saying. Some people want that to be left alone. If he shared that with you, that's him letting you understand him and how he grew up.
Check this out. Now, this is just what it is. When you decide, and you can determine how much you want to fight it, but when you become Kim Mulkey and you win national championships, you decide that you're going to take all the good to come with winning championships, then you got to take the other stuff, which is you're a public figure. And so people write about you, people talk about you, people do all this other stuff. It come with the $10 million contract. It come with it. And there are a few people I know who say, you know what? Marion Barber was one. He said, you know what? I don't want to talk to y'all when I score 4 touchdowns. I don't want to talk to y'all when I get 100 yards. I don't want to talk to y'all when I fumble. I don't want to talk to y'all at all. No time. Ever. Never. And you know what? Okay. Rocket this man. I don't want to talk to y'all after I score 81-yard touchdown in overtime. I don't want to talk to y'all after I had 200 yards receiving. I don't want to talk to y'all when I drop 2 passes. I just don't want to talk to y'all. Ever. Okay, cool. So, if you are consistent in your approach over a period of time, the media will allow you to do that. But that's really like the 1% of people. Most people want the adulation that comes from the success that they have. And when you take it, you got to take that other bullshit with it, too.
That's just how it works. There's a lot of things you do in this life. There's a lot of things I've done that people would consider successful, or people would say, hey, man, you do that? Yeah, I do it. I can do it, but I don't like it. It's like, I can handle it. I can do it, but I don't have to like it, man. You ain't going to, you know, there's a lot of times you say, hey, well, I can, like, say truck driver, I can run this route faster than this guy, and I can do this, and I can do that. Oh, yeah, you think, and I looked at a guy, and I said, you don't think I can drive straight with no rest 10 hours from El Paso? Yeah, you can do it, but your ass ain't going to like it. And so that's kind of the logic where, you can try to keep your shit private, or you can fight the media, or the media can do this, but you ain't gonna like it. It's just certain parts of it. So yeah, I ain't trying to drag that on, but yeah, it's always interesting because I had to separate the two when we started talking about that, and that's why I brought up the Parcells stuff.
Well, we're gonna come back whenever the story come back.
Out
and talk about the story,
most definitely,
and see what she's so upset about. Because I've heard some other stuff that I'm not going to share because I just need to read it and see if what I heard was true or not about the story. And sometimes, man, people don't necessarily want their truth out. It could be your truth, and you might think people will view you in a certain way if your truth comes out, and so they just don't want their truth out.
Well,
I think all of us may have a little bit of that.
Some reporters, don't take offense to this, but I liken it to car salesmen. You have to prove that you're a good guy. We don't have to prove that you're a bad guy sometimes. That's the reputation of it. You see what I'm saying? That's the reputation of the thing where it's like, here come a reporter. Some people look at it as, you got to show me you good. You ain't never faced that? You faced that.
That's... what I always have tried to do, I'm not even going to say try, what I make it a point to do, it's funny you mention that. I talked to my class at SMU about this the other day. I make it a point to separate myself from the media. And you're like, well, what are you talking about? No, I don't allow, when I'm having smaller conversations or one-on-one conversations, and maybe you're trying to, let's put it like this. Say I'm trying to interview Kim Mulkey, and she says, I had such a bad experience with the media. I don't want to talk to you, Jacques. You media guys do this. Well, my whole conversation would be, hey, Kim, I'm not going to judge you by what all other basketball coaches do. I'm going to judge you on you. So you should judge me on me. And depending on who it is, I'd be like, you either fuck with me or you don't. But do it because I'm Jacques. And you get down with Jacques, or Jacques can go fuck himself. But don't do it because the media has done a certain thing. I ain't got shit to do with them.
But that's what I'm me. That's my exact point. You are proving that you're worth talking to.
Well, that's only the people who know me.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. If it's like I say, if the first thing I go to a dealership, I'm already going, all right, he finna shoot his shot. He finna come up with some, hey, with $8,000 down, you can pay $1,500 a month. You is a damn lie. But you had to take your shot. So now what we gonna do? You took your shot. Now let's get down to the real deal. Give me a good interest rate. Give me good terms. Let me get up out of here. And so he if he keep trying to do that, how much was your last car payment shit that don't have nothing to do with this deal, then we out. He's proved to me he ain't no good. But if he said, what you got? What numbers you got? All right. you know, we doing this and the numbers are right, and that's a good salesman. And I'm coming back, and I'm talking to him, and I'm coming to him, and I'm referring you to him. Got to be the same thing with reporting where, hey, you write a story, you don't do nothing stupid to somebody, and your reputation is, hey, it's okay to talk to him.
Yeah. And, you know, some of it is, some of it just, and some of it, what you just said is true. And some of it don't have nothing to do with you. Meaning, I talk about this when I'm talking about books, but it really relevant to everything. Say I want to write a book on you. I can say, hey, Joe, I've just gotten a deal to write a biography on you and your life. And you can say, hey, congratulations. If you'd like to talk for an interview once or twice, we can probably work that out, no problem. Or you could say, hey, congratulations, I'm happy for you, I don't really want to deal with it, so, you know, go do your thing. Or you could say, hey, man, I don't want you to write no fucking book on me, I don't want you to talk to nobody I know, stay the fuck out of my business. Either one of those are all three things you could get from somebody. And no matter which one of those answers you get, the book's still getting written. It's just a matter of whether it's going to be a little easier or a little harder, but it's going to be written. You, because you don't want it written, that's a you problem. That's not a me problem.
Yeah, that's a little different. That's where you're going down the way of being a public figure, and you don't have no control of what somebody going to say. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Okay, I get it.
But no, that's what I started this whole conversation by saying what? It was a very interesting journalism conversation. And that's what it is. What do you owe a subject? What does the subject owe you? You know, how do you operate in this weird dynamic that reporters and subjects have? And it's all interesting. And so, you know, when the story comes out, it'll be interesting to see what the reaction is from the public, what the reaction is from Mulkey, and what the reaction is from Kent Babb, the author, in terms of what he was trying to accomplish. But it's been a riveting conversation, I think, anyway. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I'd like to encourage everybody to go to the YouTube page, The Real Jacques Talk. Subscribe, like, leave a comment. I'm telling y'all, we got some big things popping at the start of May that you aren't going to want to miss.
So we bumping the recipe?
Yeah.
All right. Because I ate some egg whites the other day.
We'll get back to the recipe.
Oh, that's a big deal, dog. It was good. It was good, too.
Oh, all right. Well, I got a couple recipes for next week. I'll give y'all double recipes next week. I didn't expect this conversation to go quite as long.
Yeah, but I just want to talk. Okay, man, that's fine, man. I ate the egg whites, man. It was good, man. I seasoned them all. My wife seasoned them all that stuff, man. It was pretty good. All right,
since Joe has decided he needs to have a recipe this week, let me give y'all this recipe.
Hell, I might like it, man. It all sounds good. It all sounds good.
If you like the egg whites, you'll like this. This is called Joe put the flashlight up there and I came back out for an encore.
There you go. Flashlight.
You know, I believe in fitness. And I'm going to tell y'all this about fitness and eating right. Trust the process. All right? Because what I'm giving you is lifestyle. It's not about a diet where you hop on and hop off. It's a lifestyle. Just eat this way in general all the time and you're good. If you're trying to maintain, you're trying to lose a little bit, you're good.
Can I say something? Just let me say something right quick. See, here's the thing that I'm learning right here. I ate the egg white McMuffin. When I was trying to change my lifestyle, so to speak, I ate the egg white McMuffin from McDonald's because I thought it was their big diet thing, and I was like, let me eat that. That was the most tasteless, flat, useless shit I ever ate in my life. But the other day when my wife cooked the egg whites, like you've been talking about and I've been reading about now, is what you put in it, how you season it, and all of that stuff that don't add that many calories, but it make it so much better tasting. So that's where I'm learning. That's what I'm learning with these recipes. And that's all what right. I wanted to say.
Well, here's a great one. Matter of fact, I'm going to send you a picture
And you welcome. You welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can visualize it while I'm talking about it.
Always do. That's what makes shit sound good.
I'm gonna give you the. I'm gonna give you a alternative egg white option.
Cool.
These are called egg white McMuffins. Egg white muffins.
We did that one.
Oh, that's the one y'all did?
No. We didn't do that. But you and Brand, my daughter, do that. Remember, you already told us that, put it in the thing. Yeah, yeah. Okay. That's next, player. That's next.
All right. Well, I'm finna break it down to you right now. Get yourself some egg whites. Get yourself a muffin pan.
Spray the pan. Put your egg whites in there. Yeah.
Can I do
this? I know what you've done already. Okay, go ahead. I thought you was gonna give me something else. I know that already.
Well, everybody don't know it.
The people heard it. The people heard it. You had it on the show.
Did I do that on the show?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Well,
because you can. That's how I know it. That's what got me to buy the case of egg whites, bro. You influencing the brother, man. I'm trying to give you your prop.
Don't even know it.
Yeah, give your prop.
Okay, I'm finna go to this other recipe. Then.
There you go.
Let me send you a picture of that because I did this one this morning as well. I did the egg whites this morning, and I did these. These are called chicken power protein muffins. That's a lot going on there, but they're very good and good for you. So what you do, go to the store and get a box of Kodiak protein pancake mix. You can use Bisquick, but I prefer to use Kodiak because it's got more protein in it. Get Kodiak protein mix. Get a pound of either, I prefer ground chicken because it's got less fat, more protein. You can also get some breakfast sausage, but again, I prefer ground chicken, less fat, more protein. 4 eggs, 1/4 cup of cheese. Some people use more, I use less. You take a cup of pancake powder, waffle powder, put it in a mixing bowl, add 4 eggs, mix it up. All right. Then you add 1/4 cup of cheese. Some people use a cup. That's too much to me, but use it to your taste. I use 1/4 cup of cheese. Add that to the pancake mix. Stir it up. While you're doing all that, you should be browning a pound of breakfast sausage or ground chicken, which is what I prefer. When it's brown, you drain any excess water, oil from it. Fold that into the batter. All right. So now you got a thick batter with chicken and cheese and pancakes and eggs in the batter. Then you spray with that oven cooking spray on your muffin pan. And that should make about 12 muffins. You just fill it up in the muffin pans. You bake it on 375 for 17 minutes. When it's done, you stick a fork to make sure you can stick a fork in it and not pull out anything. Your fork should be clean when you pull it out. That means it's done. And those things have about 15 grams of protein, like 2 net carbs. They're really good. They're good for you. You can use some zero syrup and dip them in there. You can put a little bit of jam on there, depending on whether you're trying to go no sugar or low sugar. Or you can just eat it plain. And it's good and good for you. And like I said, I did all that in 20 minutes this morning. It took about 3 minutes to prepare, 17 minutes to cook. And then when you're looking for a snack, you're like, damn, I need something, a little something. You go right there, you pull them out the fridge, you put them in the microwave for 1 minute, and you got a good snack that's good and good for you in like a minute. Maybe 3 if it takes you a little bit of time to walk down the stairs, find a fork, and walk back up the stairs. Or to your game room or something like that.
Okay, question.
Chicken protein power muffins.
I got a question. Sir. You said, so does Bisquick have protein in it or not?
It don't have as much as this.
So it does have some. I didn't know it had protein in it.
Let me, I got an app that let me see what the app says.
I was unaware that pancake mix would have protein, but now.
This is Kodiak pancake mix. That's why it's got protein in it.
Yeah, but you said it had more than Bisquick, so I didn't know if Bisquick had any at all. That's what I was asking. So if you want the protein, you got to get the Kodiak.
Let me see. Bisquick, 2 grams of protein.
Never knew that.
Compared to like 13.
Right.
In this.
Right. Never knew that was a source of protein. All right. 2 grams is 2 grams.
So, nah, here's the thing. So I had 2 muffins. That was good for me. I would imagine you'd either have 2 or maybe 3 at one time. But when I had 2, I was trying to find the, I had 2, and it was 26 grams of protein, 4 net carbs, 10 grams of fat, 216 calories. See, that's a great breakfast. That's a great snack. Nothing wrong with that.
Well, the egg whites was on point. You put tomatoes, bell peppers, a little cheese, onion, and a little salt and pepper. A lot of pepper, a little salt. And I put some doggone green verde sauce on there.
Yeah, see? You,
boy, that stuff was, it was off the chain. And I haven't had any allergy problems. I think the yolk is what gave me problems here late on. You know, as the older I get, the yolk. But I haven't had any problems. But I did throw about 3 ribs and some sausage on top of that later on, you know, lunch. But, you know, the breakfast was low calorie and it was pretty good. So, yeah.
It's 1 meal at a time, man.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, if you're in the lifestyle, there's nothing wrong with having, you know, some ribs one day or something. You just can't do it every day.
Well, it was filling too. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. So that's what, like I say, I ain't trying to repeat myself, but doing that old style and back then is just getting out the restaurant is so bland because they make it for everybody. But if you cook it yourself, it's a whole lot better. So it's all good.
There you go.
That's for most stuff anyway.
That's all the truth right there.
Yeah, most stuff anyway. Yep. But I am going to get that rub though. I'm going to get that rub. I just had some ribs last night. And my wife got a good concoction. I think them rubs going to kick it up like old boy did.
See? There you go.
Smokey John, there you go.
We aim to please.
Roger that.
All right. Well, there's your Power Puff Chicken recipe. How the muffins look, Doc? I mean, I sent you a picture of them.
Oh, I ain't looked at it yet. I got to make sure we 5x5, dog. Y'all can't be looking at all that stuff and then screw this up because we at the end of a great show and I want to make sure I finish that right and I'll check it out later though. But I'm gonna get around to those most definitely because I just got started in that game and I want to feel better, so it's all good.
No, I got plenty of stuff to work on. But hey, we appreciate you guys listening. Again, go to the YouTube channel at The Real Jacques Talk. On YouTube, sign, subscribe, like, review, leave a comment. We'd appreciate it. You can follow us on IG at The Real Jacques Talk. You can find me on Twitter at JJT Journalist. I am Jean-Jacques Taylor is the handle. Until we chat again, for Big Joint the Big Rig, you guys be blessed.